We don't object to insurance benefits. We object to paying for them. How to redirect otherwise payable taxes to pay for insurance. Next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times bestselling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrew speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled at the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people, and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Folks, you may be aware that I've been a financial strategist and retirement planning specialist now for north of 48 years, helping thousands of people optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower what I call their authentic wealth. Now, if you've listened to me very much on this show, you probably understand that one of my favorite financial vehicles that allows people to accumulate their money totally tax-free, not just tax-deferred like an IRA or 401k, tax-free, and then be able to turn on tax-free income or be able to access the money without triggering tax, even before retirement or before the age of 59 and a half. And then at the end of the day, when you finally pass away, anything that is left in the account blossoms, increases in value, and transfers income tax-free. This is provided under three sections of the Internal Revenue Code that I teach to CPAs and tax attorneys in advanced continuing education. These sections are 72E, 7702, and 101A. Now, when you structure one of these insurance contracts correctly and fund it properly, which most advisors don't know how to do, it knocks the socks off of alternative ways to save for retirement, in my opinion. You only would have to earn 8 or 9% to outperform a mutual fund earning 12%, because that mutual fund you're going to have to pay tax on. So in a 33% bracket, if you're earning 12, you're only netting 8, okay? I only have to earn 9% to net 8 in a max-funded IUL insurance contract. That 1% is not tax, that 1% differential. That's the cost of the insurance that the IRS says has to be there in order for it to be tax-free. So let me get back to my opening statement. See, I have discovered in nearly five decades that people do not object to insurance benefits. If I were your employer, and I came to you and said, hey, this last year has been a banner year, and we are providing some additional benefits to all the employees this year. We are going to provide free life insurance. How much would you like? Now, the most common answer I get is, well, as much as I can get. In other words, if I don't have to pay for it, I'll take as much as I can get if it doesn't cost me anything. See, I've never had a widow or a widower turn down an insurance check. No, just keep that $1 million death benefit. That's okay. No, we don't object to the insurance benefit. We object to paying for them. A lot of people do not understand how to structure an insurance contract to primarily benefit you while you're alive. And then when you happen to die, anything left in the account blossoms and transfers tax-free. And so you're structuring it the way that actually a brokerage firm, clear back in 1980, the original brainchild, E.F. Hutton, said, hey, let's take the least amount of insurance the IRS will let us get away with under the Internal Revenue Code, so this is tax-free. Take the least amount of insurance and put in the most premium the IRS allows, and it turns into this tax-free cash cow for living benefits. So this is called a max-funded indexed universal life. Indexed universal life came around in 1997. Prior to that, in 1980, when E.F. Hutton first introduced it, it was just universal life. Then interest rates came down, and so they introduced indexed universal life. Now, ever since 1980 to today, more than four decades, I have averaged, since 1980, 9.62%. Now, let's round that down to 9.6. If you divide 9.6% into the rule of 72, it equals 7.5. That means your money doubles every 7.5 years. Yes, that means if you started out with $500,000 in one lump sum, which people did back in 1980, that $500,000 would double to $1 million in 7.5 years. $1 million doubles to $2 million in another 7.5 years. $2 million doubles to $4 million. $4 million doubles to $8 million when over a 30-year period. Yes, we have clients who now have $8 million in their portfolio of indexed universal life policies, generating between $640,000 a year to $800,000 a year of tax-free interest that they can take as income. The IRS knows they're receiving it, and it's totally tax-free. Now, when indexing came out in 1997, as interest rates came down, by using indexing, where your money is not invested at risk in the market, okay, if you're invested in an index fund like the S&P 500 Index Mutual Fund, your money's at risk in the market. And in 2008, you'd have lost 40% of your money. If you had $1 million in 2007, that million would have dwindled down to about $600,000 in one single year in 2008 if your money was in an indexed fund, S&P 500 index fund. No, if your money was linked to that S&P 500 in an indexed universal life, you would not have lost one dime of your million when the market went down. You may not have made anything in 2008, but you didn't lose because your money's not invested in the market, okay? You're linking your returns to an index, a measuring tape, so to speak, like the S&P 500 or maybe the Dow Jones or the Russell 2000 or whatever. And so the insurance company takes the interest on your million, and they're generally earning right now around 4%, let's say. So 4% on $1 million would be $40,000. You can settle for the 4% if you want, or you can tell them to use that interest on your million to invest however they see fit so that they will have the wherewithal to pay you whatever the S&P does in this example. So what do they do with that $40,000 of interest on your million? They buy upside options in the S&P 500 if that's the one you chose. Now, you can diversify between several of these. That means if the S&P goes up 8%, that $40,000 of options doubles to $80,000. They pay you $80,000 or 8%. If you got a 12% increase that year on the S&P, they may pay you 12%, maybe up to a cap. But the floor is zero, because if you guess wrong and the market loses, the options expire worthless, but you still have your $1 million. You just gave up the interest on your million that year to sort of go for it. Does that sort of make sense? You wouldn't believe how many financial advisors do not understand what I just explained. Now, when you use indexing, that allows you to participate when the market goes up, which in a 10-year period, generally the market is up 7 of those 10 years. 3 of those 10 years, the market is down. But you usually average out more around the 9, 9.5, 10% range if all you do is just link and you walk away or stick your head in the sand or fall asleep like Rip Van Winkle for 10 years and wake up. Your money would have doubled easily in the worst decade since the Great Depression, 2000 to 2010, when there were only 5 up years and 5 down years. But by rebalancing, in other words, during 2004 and 5, you didn't have to sit there and earn 0, 0, 0 3 years in a row after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. You could move back over to the general account portfolio. Back then, it was 5%. In 2007, you could have earned 0, but in 2008, you just move over and settle for the 4 or 5%, and your average return would have been over 10%, in fact, in some cases, 11.17%. So that's a simple way of rebalancing, but many times you're able to seize opportunities when you know the market is down, like March of 2020. Many of our advisors that I point my students to, they said link to a one-year point-to-point with no cap because of COVID-19, okay? The market was down 30%. A year later, in March of 2021, the market was up 66.33%. They charge you 5 percentage points when you link to a no cap. And so they netted 61.33% instead of 66%, shucky darn. But folks received a 61.33% return on that. That's called rebalancing. And so if I earn an average of 11 and I net 10, that is as good as earning 15% in a tax-deferred IRA or 401k in a mutual fund, because after tax, in a 33% bracket, I'm only netting 10. In an insurance contract, I only have to earn 11 and net 10, and that 1% differential is not tax. It's the cost of the insurance that the IRS says has to be there in order for it to be tax-free. So I look at it like, well, Uncle Sam's paying for my insurance, not directly, but indirectly. I'll take the insurance that comes along for the ride, because if I die, if I leave behind $1 million in my account, it will double to over $2 million right now if I died and I'm 70 years old. And so that cost of insurance is just coming along for the ride. It's not free, but I'm not paying for it. It's being paid for with a minuscule portion of money that would otherwise go out the window in unnecessary tax. Does that make sense?
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
How to become totally self-insured in 20 years or less. Welcome back. This is Doug Andrew, Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. If you're just joining us, in the previous segment, I was talking about how for more than 48 years, I've redirected otherwise payable taxes to causes that I support, including insuring my life. I was mentioning that I've never met a widow or a widower that has ever turned down an insurance check for life insurance. In other words, we don't object to insurance benefits. We object to what? Paying the premiums. So for years, one of my favorite financial instruments is a maximum funded indexed universal life insurance contract, which is actually structured primarily for the goal of tax-free accumulation of money and then tax-free access or tax-free income during retirement that will, when structured correctly, in my opinion, knock the socks off of where most Americans put their money in traditional IRAs or 401ks, because you would have to be earning at least 15% return in a mutual fund portfolio or a tax-deferred IRA or 401k that in a 33 1/3% tax bracket, you'd be netting 10, and then the asset manager, manage it, would charge you 1% in fees usually. So if you earn 15, you're only netting 9. I can earn 11 and net 10 in indexed universal life way more safely and predictably than with my money in a mutual fund or the stock market trying to earn 15%. And so for years, I've been using indexed universal life and rebalancing, which I was explaining in the previous segment, to earn average returns of 11% or thereabouts and netting around 10%. In other words, there's only 1% difference between the gross rate of return and the net internal rate of return on my money, so that I'm earning a net rate of return of let's say 10%, meaning the insurance is coming along for the ride. I'm really earning 11, and 1 percentage point is paying for the insurance that the IRS says has to be there in order for the money to grow tax-free and provide me with tax-free income. So technically speaking, that's a 1% or money that would otherwise go out the window in unnecessary tax if I followed the herd and put my money in traditional IRAs or 401ks, is what I was saying in the previous segment. And so I'll take as much insurance as I can get, because if I have $1 million in a portfolio of laser funds and it generates $100,000 a year of tax-free income from age 60, 65, clear until if I live to be 120 without depleting principal based on average returns, any time along the way, if I die, the million would likely pay out around double that or $2 million. Right now, I'm 70 years old. Every million I might leave behind in a portfolio of laser funds would double to about $2 million and transfer tax-free. There's not an IRA or 401k around that will do that, or a Roth. And people say, well, golly, why does it do that? Well, that's because it blossoms, turns into a tax-free insurance proceed. Well, how much does that cost? And I explain, well, is not free, but it doesn't cost me anything the way I structure it. It's being paid for with a minuscule portion of money that would otherwise go out the window in unnecessary tax, okay? So the question at the beginning of this segment is, well, how can you become totally self-insured in 20 years or less? I've helped many people do this in 12 and a half years. Why a max-funded indexed universal life, in my opinion, is a superior way to buy term and invest the difference. Because back in 1974, when I first started, I was a big buy term invest the difference proponent. And then in 1980, E.F. Hutton, which was a brokerage firm, they weren't really an insurance company, but they came up with this idea, why don't we buy term and invest the difference under a tax-free umbrella? And this was the emergence of universal life. They originally designed it to be used primarily for living benefits. So the amount of insurance, you take the least amount of insurance the IRS will let you get away with, and you put in the most money or premium the IRS allows, and it turns into this tax-free cash cow that is used for living benefits for retirement income, okay? Now, again, as I explained in the previous segment, I had clients that invested $500,000 back in 1980, and they immediately started taking out income of $50,000 a year. They were earning 11 or more, but let's just say 11, and they were netting 10. And so that generated $50,000 a year of tax-free income. We still have people that earn an average of 11 and net 10, but you have to use indexed universal life and you have to rebalance. But let's get back to how to become self-insured. See, when you take one of these out, let's say you're age 60, a lot of people think, well, the older you are, the more expensive the insurance is. Well, when you structure these correctly, no. It doesn't matter whether you're a 22-year-old athletic marathon-running female, or if you're a 60-year-old or a 78-year-old friend of our family who met me back in the 1980s. He had three blocked arteries, adult-onset diabetes, he had a prostate cancer episode, six sisters predeceased him and three brothers. You would think he had one foot in the grave, but he was able to earn 11 and net 10% on his universal life, just like a 20-year-old was able to, or a 60-year-old, because the amount of insurance required goes down the older you are and the more unhealthy you are, and he was able to qualify. And so you can start out with the least amount of insurance so that the cost of insurance is the same no matter how old you are. And if you structure it correctly, as the money grows, the insurance actually can become cheaper as you get older. And people go, say what? I've never seen a life insurance policy that gets cheaper as you get older. Well, then you haven't seen one structured the way that I'm talking about. Let me just explain it this way. If you were 60 right now and you wanted to set aside $500,000 into one of these, the minimum amount of insurance required would be about double that, or about a million. Now, you could buy way more life insurance than a million for $500,000. People say, well, who puts $500,000 of premium into a million-dollar policy? Well, our clients do, because they're not after the death benefit. They're after a great rate of return on the $500,000. That $500,000, if it's earning an average of just 9.6%, like I've averaged since 1980, will double to a million in 7.5 years. Now, let's say you have $1 million in there and the original death benefit was a million. Well, see, the cash inside the policy can qualify as part of the death benefit. So when you put in $500,000 into a million-dollar policy, the net amount at risk is only half that million, because half of it's your own money now. The insurance company will only charge you for the net amount at risk, the remaining $500,000, if you put $500,000 into a million-dollar life insurance policy. Now, when that $500,000 doubles to a million, now you have a million of cash value. The original death benefit was a million. Now, there is no net amount at risk, but the IRS says, well, the insurance has to stay 5 percentage points ahead. So if you happen to die and you had $1 million sitting in there of your own money, they would pay out $1,050,000 in that example. If you waited another 7.5 years and the million doubled to 2 million and you died, the insurance company would pay out 2.1 million. But they are only charging you for the remaining $100,000. When you have $2 million in there and you die, they leave behind $2.1 million. They're only going to charge you for the remaining $100,000. And the interest they're crediting you on $2 million at that point is so much greater than the cost of the insurance on $100,000 that the actual cost of insurance gets cheaper as you get older, to where if in the 20th year, let's say that's when that happened, that you have $2 million in there. If you earned 11, you might net 10.9 cash on cash in that given year. But retroactive back to day one, generally speaking, about one percentage point of your interest is what pays for the insurance that the IRS says has to be there. But you can become self-insured in 12 and a half years, 15 years, 20 years. Instead of buy-term invest the difference proponents, they say after 30 years, you can finally let go of your life insurance because now your money's finally grown to that.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.